All right, this is the straight pawpaw jam. Got about a good tablespoon here. I'm gonna blow on it. Oh my goodness gracious. Oh, wow. Don diggity. Yeah, just hand over that ladle.
That's the sound of fresh jam being consumed. In this case, straight out of the spoon. Jam may not be the star of the brunch show. It's not a theatrical omelet station or a Bloody Mary bar. But what is brunch without a jubilant jam over toast, a fluffy bun, or even a croissant? I'm Gina Kaufman. Today on KCUR's Central Standard, we'll talk about this year's top spots for brunch. Let's start by following our producer, Matthew Long Middleton, on his journey to learn the art of making tasty preserves from a little-known Missouri fruit.
I met Christine and Bradford Williams in the kitchen of McLean's Bakery on Gregory Boulevard. The air smells of bread and cakes. They unloaded their ingredients, large plastic tubs filled with frozen fruit.
I am working on pawpaw jam right now that we harvested last fall. It's been in the freezer all winter waiting for us patiently to get to it. So right now I'm at removing the seeds, and one pawpaw has about probably 10 to 15 seeds the size of kidney beans. Pawpaw is a native plant of Missouri. Actually, the largest native plant in the U.S. is what it is. And it tastes a lot like a banana and a pineapple and a mango all together. So it's counted as a tropical fruit for America.
And so where did you find it?
We know a man through KC Local Foods, and he called us and said that he had some pawpaws on his 17-acre forest land. And so we went there and walked through the forest and found him and took our son, who's 25, to shake the trees because they don't really fall to the ground very quickly. So you shake the trees and what's ripe will fall down then.
Well, it took us a few minutes to learn after getting hit a couple times that what you do when you're shaking the tree, you don't look up for the pawpaws, you look down at the ground. That way, if you're getting hit, you're getting hit on the back of the head. And what you want to do is see where they fall on the ground, because they'll bounce and roll and get into places where you can't get. So, but other than that, it was a beautiful day.
So this is how you make a pawpaw jam. First, I should say a jam means you're using the whole flesh of the fruit. A jelly is when you render out the pulp and are essentially left with just the juice of the fruit. Right. So Christine and Bradford take apart their new jars. They dump the metal tops and the glass containers into boiling water to sterilize them. Meanwhile, they take the pectin, which helps give the jelly or jam its gooey quality, and mix it together with sugar. And it's a healthy amount of sugar. They bring the pawpaw fruit mash to a boil.
You want a rolling boil, and you want to let it roll for a minute. That's something I had to learn.
It smells like a rich, nutty banana bread.
A jelly smells good when it's cool, but cooking anything, that smell is, because you thought this smelled good when we first started. Yeah. And I think it's boiling.
Yes!
It's boiling. I need the sugar.
Christine brings that sugar and pectin mix over to the stove, pouring it into the bubbling goo. They let the whole mix come to a boil again, and at this point, they've got a jam. They take that hot jam and ladle it into the warm, now sterilized jars.
Well, all you're doing now is sealing your jar. So you're putting it back in there and you're going to let it boil for 10 minutes, rolling boil. Your water is going to be covering your jars. It's really important so that you have that evenness all around your jar. And so just process it for 10 minutes, take it out, and let it start cooling off.
So into the boil bath the jars go. Now we have ourselves a jar of jam. And when it's all done, you can hope for results this good.
Don diggity.
That was KCUR's jam correspondent, Matthew Long Middleton. And yes, he really says things like Don diggity in real life, so I believe his enthusiasm was authentic. Now that we have some spreadable fruit for the table, let's see what's on the menu for brunch in Kansas City. I'm Gina Kaufman, here with the food critics, and I want them to start by helping us find brunch spots with exceptional baked goods, bread, scones, croissants, biscuits, things that go well with jam. Jenny Vergara of Feast Magazine, start us off.
Heirloom Bakery in East Brookside would be my pick for that. They really, bread and baked goods is what they specialize in. And there's several, the croissants are delicious. All the pastries are good. I even like their biscuits, which are just kind of simple and plain, but they're very tender. So that would be my pick.
Charles Ferruza of the Independent and Shawnee Mission Post, where do you think I should go to start my brunch with a fluffy bun slathered in butter or jam?
A fluffy bun.
Mm-hmm. A fluffy mm-hmm. bun.
Wow. Maybe Cafe Europa. I like the bread assortment they serve at Lydia's, too, mm-hmm. for their brunch. It's a nice little assortment of breads and flavored butters, although I personally hate flavored butters. But
if you liked them.
But if I liked them. And I have friends who do very much, but I'm anti-flavored butter.
So. Okay, good to know. Mary Block is here. She blogs about food at Around the Block. And Mary, what's your suggestion?
Well, I'm sorry I went third because Heirloom was my first choice and Lydia's was my second.
But you're here to confirm that those are excellent choices.
I am. I think both of them would be good places to go.
Okay, well, obviously there is a lot more to brunch than pastries and jam, and we're going to dig in. Call 816-235-2888 to tell us about the brunch destination you love or the brunch offering Kansas City desperately needs. We want to consider our town's brunch strengths and brunch weaknesses. 816-235-2888. Critics, what are your overall feelings about brunch, like as an institution?
I love it. I think it's a great social occasion. It's a time of the week when you could have a little booze with your brunch and not at that hour of the morning and not feel so guilty about it. And I love all the foods.
As opposed to the rest of the week when we are doing it but feeling extraordinarily guilty.
Exactly. And I love the breakfast-lunch combination, and you can kind of mix and match and have whatever you want.
Charles?
Well, you know, my feelings about brunch have been cyclical over the years. And, you know, I mean, as a young man, I really liked it. I liked the social aspect of it. And then when I started working weekend nights, I started resenting it and hating going to brunch. And for one thing, it involved, like, waking up. And I even started a group in the early 1980s called GAB, GAB. Gays Against Brunch, because so many of my friends were, you know, it was like a rallying cry for them, and I just started hating it more. And oh, you know, in the last decade or so, I've kind of mellowed toward brunch. I really try to stay away from buffet brunches. I mean, they're dangerous for me. I mean, for one thing, you think you're paying a price, and it doesn't matter how bad things are in the buffet, you put them on your plate. I do anyway, and I shouldn't.
Well, Charles, okay, so you resented brunch, it seems like, for a few different reasons, but largely that you had to stay up late the night before working, and so this was sort of like an imposition on your morning. But that brings me to a question. I mean, I remember in my 20s, I don't have this problem now, but in my 20s, my early 20s especially, I couldn't understand why brunch stopped being served at like 2, because I was like, you know, why is there no place left to eat brunch when I wake up at 1 p.m.? I can't believe I used to be able to sleep until 1 p.m., but regularly I did that. And I'm curious about whether anyone knows of a brunch that continues, like, for people, I would say, in that age group, largely.
Well, poor restaurateurs have to go home sometime. I mean,
or
you know,
the kitchen has to transition until dinner.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, mostly in Kansas City, you either have a brunch business or you have a Sunday dinner business. And rarely do you have both. Because, like I said, somebody's got to go home and sleep and, you know, be recharged for the week ahead. But yeah, you know, brunch, I think, typically ends around 3-ish in Kansas City. That would be the latest I've ever seen brunch being served.
Well, there you have it. You better be awake by 2.
Set your alarm for at least noon.
What would you consider sort of crucial brunch staples? Like something that if it's not on the brunch menu, people are going to show up and be disappointed.
Good question. I would say
biscuits and gravy, I think, would have to be on that list somewhere.
Or French toast of some kind.
Eggs, although, for sure, you know, of any.
Oh, a Benedict of some kind, yeah.
A Benny, as they're referred to now.
But I think there also have to be some lunch type items. Even if you're mixing, you know, pork with your eggs.
Right, or so, else this is just a late breakfast.
Exactly.
Well, that's actually a good question. So how many of you guys actually go and eat the brunch items on brunch? Like, I never do. I always get, like, the more breakfasty, I mean, a salad with a protein or something I would never do, or a burger for brunch kind of puzzles me.
Yeah,
I mean,
I guess it depends what time we walk in.
I guess, you know? That's true. I guess that's
Jenny,
true.
Jenny, is a salad with a protein, do you count that, like a poached egg on your salad as that? Because that seems like, to
that's
me,
a thing right now.
It still feels like lunch.
A marriage of lunch and breakfast, especially if it has potatoes in it.
Yeah, technically it probably could be, but I would just never want that at brunch. I want decadent, you know, sloppy, gooey.
Stick to your ribs.
Yes, stick to your ribs, all of that. That's what I want for brunch.
Another thing about brunch, and it's another reason I sort of soured on brunch at a certain point in my life, which is they're very alcohol-oriented, you mm-hmm. know? And when I stopped drinking in 1988, mm-hmm. Brunch lost a lot of its joie de vivre for me, you know? Mm-hmm. I liked drinking, mm-hmm. and I liked drinking at brunch. And, you know, I liked all the... Now I can't even imagine myself drinking a mimosa. I mean, the idea just makes me sick. And, I mean, what a waste of champagne and orange juice. But you know, they're very alcohol-friendly. Too alcohol-friendly, I think.
Yeah, you know, I mean, that is inherently what makes brunch different from breakfast. Yeah. I mean, it's boozy breakfast is basically what brunch has become. And
with some greens.
Greens?
But Mary, you were saying that the sort of salad with protein, perhaps a poached egg, is a very in thing right now. What are some other new things popping up on brunch menus or trendy things?
Well, anything with an egg on it is a trendy thing these days.
Yeah, it used to be put a bird on it. Now it's put an egg on it.
Exactly. So many menus make chilaquiles. That's a big thing right now, even if you're not a traditionally Mexican restaurant.
And even if they're not really chilaquiles. Have you noticed that?
Explain what those are.
So you take tortilla chips.
Typically leftover.
Yeah, and they're soaked in the chili sauce, whether it's the green or red, and they're baked usually, and then they put an egg on top. It's pretty simple, but really good.
Okay, and tell me, you guys, about some regional specialties from various places throughout the country or even beyond that are popping up on sort of non-specific menus, I guess. Things like shrimp and grits. Mary, I know you have a few recommendations for that.
I do. And I think this is obviously my Midwestern bias, but I really think the shrimp and grits that our chefs are doing are better than what you get in the East, Southeast, because theirs are kind of shrimp and grits. Ours have a red eye gravy or something else going on that just makes it more interesting.
So where, Mary, tell us your recommendations for shrimp and grits. We'll hear about other regional specialties perhaps and then turn to our callers.
Well, my two favorite places, I'm bunching rye and blue stem together. I guess actually blue stem stopped serving brunch, but rye makes great shrimp and grits. And you can have those at the Blue Stem Lounge during the week for non-brunch eaters. And then Happy Gillis right now has a great shrimp and grits dish, and it's pretty different. He does his version of an XO sauce, which is kind of a Chinese spicy sauce, and the soft egg, and he does mustard greens on it. Really, really good. Once in a while, he puts some of those crunchy corn nuts on top, and it's just got – it's much more creative.
That is an unexpected use of corn nuts, I would say.
Yes.
Anyone else have a regional specialty that they're starting to notice on a menu for brunch that seems exciting or just well done?
I just wrote a piece on this morning. Chicken and waffles, which is Southern. And when I moved to Kansas City, I don't think there was any place in Kansas City serving chicken and waffles. And now, you know, you could find it just about any place. Not always very good, but you can find it in places. And in fact, I just had it at the International House of Pan, IHOP, I guess they're called now. And it would not be comparable to Niecy's, which serves chicken wings. But you know what? I mean, for white people's chicken and waffles, it was pretty good.
I think hash actually is a good regional representation because it's really all the leftover, lovely, locally sourced kind of potatoes and veggies all kind of chopped together. So, and I'm a hash freak. I know, I mean, but I eat leftovers too, so I have no shame. But yeah, I love hash. I love hash.
I do too. Those crispy potatoes make it.
Yep, I think so too. I think so too.
And Jenny, where are you recommending that people get hash?
I really like, there's a dish called the Hashes, plural, at the Corner Restaurant in Westport. And I really have a struggle to get away from that dish because it is just something that just like checks all my boxes. But it's the base of it is sweet potatoes and it has caramelized red onions, mushrooms, Swiss chard, bell peppers, roasted tomatoes, Brussels sprouts, one poached egg, hollandaise sauce, and then you get to choose your protein. And it's things like house-made chorizo. There's a vegetarian version that has asparagus and tomato. They have house-made pastrami, salmon and horseradish cream. I mean, whatever protein you want can be added to it. Which
yeah,
Do they serve some kind of bread with that, Jenny?
I don't remember. Yeah, I think it does have like toast on the side now that you say that.
I'm happy to hear that because the Corner used to be such a brunch institution in Kansas City and then it changed ownership a couple times. Like things happened with that and I haven't heard a lot about the new Corner restaurant. So mm-hmm. It sounds like that gets a favorable, at least that dish gets a favorable review from you.
Yeah, they have a fantastic new chef. They brought the kid over from Kaufman. His name is Ben, and I believe he's still in the kitchen there, and he's a relatively new new chef there. So I think, you know, I think the history is certainly there. I mean, you have to pay homage to it, but yeah, Corner's a great little breakfast spot.
Let's talk to Meryl in Mission. She called 816-235-2888 with this brunch recommendation. Hi, Meryl.
Hi. I wanted to talk about Julian in Brookside. It's our favorite place for brunch on a Sunday.
What do you like about it?
And, well, I have to say, first of all, the atmosphere, because usually the chef, who's also the owner, is on the premises, and she's always friendly to the customers, and all of her servers are great, too.
So it's a friendly brunch spot.
Home. Yeah. And the food is fantastic. She has a scrambled tofu on the menu that I really like with some kind of fried potatoes. And then her biscuits and this mushroom gravy that she makes are really wonderful. So those are a couple of our favorite things.
Well, thanks, Meryl.
And the coffee is French press, and so that always makes me feel special.
Yes, the coffee is an important part of brunch. Thank you so much, Meryl.
Yeah, bye.
Anyone else have anything to say about Julian as a brunch spot?
In the springtime, they've got a great patio. So it's one of those few places where you really can have brunch outside.
Yes, brunch outside is a great thing. It's just one of a few places. Does anything else spring to mind? Not just now. Okay, Sean in Kansas City, what can you share?
Hi. For my family, we like to go to the Classic Cookie. It's in Waldo at Gregory and Warnell, small family-owned place, and they just have really good food that's locally sourced, and it's always very, very fresh.
Well, thanks for that recommendation, Sean. What about the Classic Cookie? That's been around a long time.
You know, I want to say that I ate there for brunch not all that long ago. In fact, it might have been last week. And you know what surprised me? What used to keep me from going was how crowded it always was, and there might be a wait. Because so many other places have opened in Waldo recently. You know, Waldo's quite a scene now.
Yep.
It was not anywhere near as busy as it used to be, even though the original owner has it again. Mm-hmm. And the food was delicious, as it always was, but I think people are going to have to rediscover it.
That's good. That's a good recommendation.
So Classic Cookie in Waldo. Mary, tell us about Sava. That's one of your recommendations.
It is, especially if you do want some sparkling wine or a mimosa or something with
your
it.
Your hair.
Yeah. It's just a darling little place, kind of a jewel box in Westport. And they have French, which makes sense since the name of the restaurant is Sava. Mm-hmm. They have quiches and crepes and also, I think, croissant and other pastries as well. But it's just a darling little spot. And if you want to go have a glass of sparkling rosé, and a quiche, it's the perfect place.
And Jenny, you are recommending Jax's Fish House?
Yeah, I have a couple of seafood places actually on my list. And Jax is on there because they have a couple of things that are of a southern ilk, aside from just most of their brunch items, actually, probably the more expensive ones, are like seafood platters, like chilled seafood platters meant to share. And who doesn't love that? I mean, it's so easy and simple. But there's a couple of dishes on there that I really like. And one of them is a blackened catfish Benny or Benedict. It's got a biscuit and it's topped with gumbo and a poached egg over the fish. Preserved okra. It's like spicy and comforting. And it's got bread and egg and this, you know, luscious kind of thick gumbo that has a lot of spice to it. I love that dish.
What else do you get there?
I also like their waffles. So speaking of chicken and waffles, this is a take on that. It's basically waffles with buttermilk fried oysters on there, which would be right up my alley. So,
well, we are going to take a short break. Keep calling. We need to know where to go for an awesome brunch on a super chill weekend. 816-235-2888. Is the number to call. Tell us where you go, what you order, why you love it. You're helping us make our official guide to the best brunches in town. I'm Gina Kaufman. Stay with us. Welcome back to KCUR's Central Standard. I'm Gina Kaufman on the hunt for an amazing brunch spot I've never been to. Of course, it does not hurt to be reminded of the classic standbys either. Call 816-235-2888 with your recommendations. I'm here with the food critics, Charles Ferruza, Mary Block, and Jenny Vergara. Hi again, everyone.
Hey, hello.
Gina.
So let's get some more recommendations. We have some callers, but Charles, something we have not yet talked about is the buffet-style brunch. You have a couple of recommendations.
You know, they've really fallen out of favor. I mean, it's hard to, you know, that used to be the brunch.
Well, and everyone always emails you Mother's Day and Easter and wants to know where the buffet brunches are for the large families. And they're hard to find. Hotels, I think, is usually where I end up. But
well, and some just do it for the holidays.
Right. Right. I guess that's true, too.
Why do people want that?
Well, they used to be in the 70s and early 80s, really extravagant. Mm-hmm. And, you know, one of the reasons I was kind of sad to see at Crown Center.
The American?
Benton's clothes. Oh. Benton's had this very theatrical, over-the-top brunch with everything you'd...
Ice sculptures,
a musician. Everything. I mean, they were really the throwback brunch of all time.
I mean, it's the idea that a large group of people can all get what they want and also kind of enjoy sitting together for a while but not spend a lot of time waiting for a meal.
Right.
It's also the American way of getting, you know, tons of food. It's quantity over quality.
Right, right.
I always feel like I've eaten a bunch of ingredients but never had a dish. That's what my takeaway always is.
But Charles, you're recommending a couple of places for people who do want that.
The Bristol. I understand the downtown location has a very, very nice buffet brunch. And I had to put on the Horizon Buffet at the Ameristar Casino because it doesn't matter what you think you're looking for, it's there.
That's a whole nother animal, though.
Oh, yeah.
The casinos. Yeah.
I mean, and I should, as a shout out, say that the worst casino buffet was at the Isle of Capri, and they've had a complete overhaul, and it's very quite nice now, much to my amazement. The food is still as horrible as you know. Actually, it's improved quite a bit.
But you also have a couple of places where you could choose between buffet and menu.
Although I think most people at these places do both. Like Lydia's has that little appetizer, right. I should say antipasto table. And a dessert table. And a good friend of mine loves Grand Street Cafe because they really have an elaborate appetizer, salad, dessert buffet table that comes with the brunch items. And, you know, I mean, who's going to turn their back at that?
It's kind of a brilliant way to handle service at brunch, actually.
Yeah.
And I love the one at Lydia's because they have some of my favorite things on that antipasto table.
They have one of
the Caesar salad.
One of the best Caesar salads in the city,
I agree. And they have lots of different vegetables. And then you get the little biscotti at the end that are yours for the taking.
Yum. Well, let's hear from our callers. We've got Cindy with us from Independence. Hi, Cindy.
Hi.
What do you like to get for brunch?
Well, we really like Beer Kitchen, and I love the Dutch Babies there, which are the baked pancakes. And they have several different ones, but the one I really like has the apples on it. It's just a really, really nice brunch item. And I'm probably in the minority. I don't go out to brunch for the booze. I go out for the food, and my husband, too. Another place, now I haven't been for brunch, so I'm not sure if it's on the brunch menu, but it's the blackened shrimp and grits at Graham and Dunn. You were talking about shrimp and grits, and that is an amazing shrimp and grits dish that I really enjoy. And I'm not sure, though, if it's on their brunch menu, though.
Well, thanks, Cindy. That's she's mentioned Beer Kitchen in Westport and Graham and Dunn on the Plaza. Has anyone been to Graham and Dunn specifically for brunch?
I have. She's right. Those shrimp and grits are great. And they have a jalapeno gravy that goes with it. Really good. They also have chicken and waffles. And I always think I'm not a fan, but it's done so beautifully. And they have homemade hot sauce, which makes a big difference. And they have a nice hash. I think it's a burnt end hash.
Well, and the best patio in the city.
Yep.
So, and they open all those doors. And it just feels really breezy and brunchy in there. It's a great spot if you like brunch.
If the weekend's warm like it has been, that'll be a nice choice. Well, what about George in Overland Park? George, what do you want to recommend for brunch?
Greetings, folks. And I don't know if it's kind of a half and half brunch a la carte buffet by definition, but La Bodega. And I've been to the one down on 119th. What's interesting for me there is just the cultural aspect of it, that they can't really call it French toast at a Spanish restaurant, so they call it Andorran toast.
But is it the same thing, or is it different?
Well, no, I mean, it's prepared with a very nice bread. It's not brioche. I really can't tell you what type of bread it is, but it's wonderful. It's got a little apricot glaze on it. It's really tasty. But the question really I want to bring to the discussion is, you've already talked about the concept of a la carte versus buffet. Is it really going to brunch when you order off a menu?
Why wouldn't it be? Can you give us argument?
Yes, absolutely. My thought process is, again, breakfast and lunch are meals that are set. Brunch is something, again, in my history, has always been, as you already discussed, a large gathering for a good social event, usually after church or at a family gathering. And the idea of not having to have a menu set in front of you where you all have to sit and think about it versus just going to a set of tables and picking up the food that you want. Again, it's just for me the idea of I'm ordering a special dish. Yes, it's only made on a certain day, but it's still a menu.
Okay.
It's not anything special.
So to George, the menu is antithetical to brunch. I'm seeing a lot of critics shaking their heads. George, I don't think you're...
He's on that island by himself, I'm afraid. I'm afraid he's on that island by himself.
And the counterpoint to George, as far as the social aspect of it, I always find when you're going to a buffet, you're really not talking to people.
That's right.
You're jumping
up
and down all the time, and you can't really have a real conversation.
I agree with that.
You know, I'm old enough to remember the 1960s when we would go to brunch... and my father was like buffet phobic. But I don't remember us ever going to a buffet. I don't remember seeing buffets. You went to brunch, and it was all about the time period, you know, a little bit after breakfast, a little bit before.
You guys,
traditional
this is
lunch.
An interesting thing because, I mean, George's take on brunch, it sounds to me, has a lot to do with his own personal background
sure.
with brunch and what the people he knew happened to do for brunch. And I wonder, I mean, he's talking about a Spanish tapas restaurant's spin on brunch. What about culturally specific variations? We're about to go to dim sum with one of our other critics, Bon Juing Lee, which you could say is a Chinese version of brunch, or maybe brunch is an American version of dim sum, whatever. But, I mean, should we be talking about other cultural variations than the ones we've already discussed?
Well, I love the idea of dim sum because it's sort of like the buffet is brought to your table.
Yeah.
You know?
I love dim sum. I'm a huge fan of dim sum. And it's the shareable component. I mean, a good dim sum, yeah, it's delicious.
Well, so I guess we'll just stick with dim sum. We'll get back to our listeners' recommendations for brunch in a little bit. But I'm really excited now to go to Bowling's on the Plaza with producer Andrea Tudhope and food photographer Bon Juing Lee, known to his fans throughout the interwebs as the Ulterior Epicure. Bowling's does an authentic dim sum with cart service on the weekends, but Andrea and Bon Juing went on a weekday when it was a little less busy. Let's join them now.
Have you ever been to a dim sum bagel before?
I have not.
Never?
Never.
Wow.
I know. How many times do you think you've had dim sum now in your life?
Oh, I couldn't count. It's a lot. So, dim sum is, in Chinese, I speak Mandarin. Dim sum is a Cantonese word, but in Mandarin, it translates to dianxin. Literally, when you translate the words, it means to touch your heart. And so they're generally little snacks and little bites, these little steam baskets filled with little steamed items that you order that you share with other people. And so it's kind of like what Americans consider brunch, where you kind of take the weekend and you go take a lazy brunch with your friends and catch up. That's kind of what dim sum is. This is specifically a Cantonese thing. So southern part of China, Hong Kong, it's primarily a weekend morning ritual where families will go and just sort of camp out at a dim sum restaurant. You'll have dads sitting there with their newspapers, and then, you know, the mothers will be sitting around gossiping, and it's their chance to catch up with other friends. The kids will be running around, and then you have these ladies who were pushing carts that's just full of food, and then you just sit and you just point to what you want, and then you just sort of graze all morning, kind of a social cultural ritual.
Were you ever a little kid running around on a dim sum?
Oh, yeah, but I grew up here, so we didn't really have that.
So yeah, your parents are from China, though, right?
Well, my father was born in Shanghai. My mother was born in Taiwan. So both sides of my family, their origins are in mainland China, but we speak Mandarin, we don't speak Cantonese, so we are not Cantonese. So this is not the food of my people, my specifically regionally speaking.
Okay, so considering there are two of us, what would you consider the staple? Like, what do we have to get?
Well, I think they've done a good job here editing down sort of the all-time hits of dim sum. you have these dumplings, which are, I think, what most people might think of when they think of dim sum are these cute little, you know, dumplings. And then there are some things that are traditional, but, you know, like the chicken feet and black bean sauce. If you're not adventurous, you might bristle at the idea of eating a chicken's foot, but it's something that I ate as a kid. And they're bony, and there's really little meat on it. It's mostly just gelatinous connective tissue with skin. You're eating skin. And then, you know, you have to pick around the bones and spit them out. And it's a very, I mean, you have to really get into it. And if you're not into it, you're not going to, I don't think a lot of people are going to like it.
I think we should try that, the chicken feet.
I mean, I love them. And I think a lot of dim sum food tends to be very flavor-packed, fatty. It's heavy food. But it's pretty tasty.
Well, that's kind of, I mean, steamed leads me to believe that it wouldn't be heavy, but.
Yeah, I think that's not the case with dim sum. Dim sum is it's very flavorful, and you'll see a lot of liberal use of fat or lard to get these sort of crispy, flaky textures.
Are you guys ready to order?
I think we are.
All right.
We're probably going to order a little more food than two people should probably order, but...
That's fine.
That's kind of par for the course for me. We will try your steamed roast pork buns. Those are the barbecued pork buns, right?
Yeah.
Okay, just want to make sure. We will have the chicken feet. Mm-hmm. The pan-fried turnip cake. We'll take the salmai. Chive dumplings. Mm-hmm. Do you want to try the sticky rice and the lotus leaf?
Yeah.
Let's try the sticky rice and the lotus leaf.
Okay.
Let's add the shrimp toast on there.
So I want to make sure that I understand the cart situation. So if this were a weekend, right, they would they be passing through with, like, options, and we would just kind of, they might slow down in front of us, and we could, like, peek into a couple baskets?
Yeah, just think of it as literally a buffet on wheels. They're literally just... They're going up and down the aisles between tables and with their carts of food. It's very much like a street hawker scene. Or you know, when you go to the ballpark and you got those people who are going up and down, you know, the aisles shouting out peanuts and cotton candy or whatever. It's kind of like that. The great thing about dim sum, the women who push the dim sum carts, they're a wonderful group of people because these women, they're slightly aggressive. They're constantly trying... They're trying to sell what's on their cart. It's a little slapdash. There's no finesse or any manners about it, you know, and I think that's a part of what I like about the dim sum culture. It's very, and the Chinese culture sometimes, it's just, you know, people are very practical.
That's awesome, like in a restaurant, imagining yeah. that is
yeah.
great.
Yeah, because I think in the Western culture, we're very much used to servers, you know, having some sort of there's a wall you don't break, and I think that wall comes down in the dim sum experience.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, so what do we have here?
So what we have here is, this is shrimp toast. And as the name suggests, it is minced shrimp that has been somehow laminated with a lot of fat onto a piece of toast.
Lamination is an interesting
But it
interesting
is. You'll
story.
See. It's somehow the minced toast. Where the toast ends and where the shrimp begins, you will not be able to distinguish, because it has been literally laminated together with fat. And then over here we have the turnip cakes.
What I love already about this is that they're both glistening.
Like I said, it's not diet food.
It's the shrimp and chai. Pork bun. These are your pork and shrimp.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And the rice and lotus leaf will be out in just a moment.
Thanks.
Okay, today. I'm gonna take a picture.
Yeah, yeah. You always get like really perfect photos. And I'm just, I mean, if you just got a perfect photo like that in 2 seconds, I have some questions for you.
What are your questions?
Like, how do you, your photos look so perfect.
Well, number one, I mean, I'm highly selective about what I post, and part of the reason I asked to sit where we're sitting is because we have natural light. That takes you 90% of the way.
Okay.
Really.
And then my second question is, do you choose your friends based on their watches and the tattoos on their arms?
Watches and the tattoos on it. Why? Do I have a lot of friends with tattoos and watches?
I just think, like, not only does the food and the photo look great, but your friends just have really beautiful
Oh, interesting. I hope all my friends are listening to this.
Maybe it's an unconscious choice.
Interesting.
Okay, so this is a chicken foot.
Well, there are many in here.
Many.
And as you can see that it's a claw. I mean,
yeah.
Right? And it's just filled with bones.
Yeah, why don't you actually just go ahead and describe what we're seeing here?
So it's just what you would imagine a chicken foot would look like. It's, not to be graphic, but just to be accurate, it looks like a slightly bloated chicken foot.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's been cooked, and it's been marinated, and it's what you would imagine. It's just little bones in there that you have to kind of, with your mouth, kind of pick out. It's not an attractive thing to eat, nor an attractive process of eating, but...
Yeah, I might actually turn the microphone off for this part.
I think some things are just meant to be sloppy and good instead of, you know, fancy and individual. Dim sum to me is one of those things. It's a communal thing. It's meant to be around a table. It's meant to be loud. It's meant to be sloppy. You know, you're going to get sauce on the table. I mean, you know, usually after dim sum meal, if your table doesn't look like it's been destroyed, then you've kind of done it.
Disservice.
You kind of done it. I mean, I'm not going to say you've done it the wrong way, but just, you know, dim sum usually is, to me, that's what it means. It's a big group of people. You know, there's sauce and everything dripping everywhere.
That makes me want to go right now. I ate some dim sum once in Chinatown, and the chicken's feet were especially memorable. Thanks to Bonjuing and Andrea for making me hungry to try it again. That intro to dim sum took place at Bowling's on the Plaza. We've got to take one more short break this morning. When KCUR's Central Standard returns, we have a little time left for some of your favorite brunch spots. I'm Gina Kaufman, back in a second. We're back. I'm Gina Kaufman, here with the food critics, and we are talking about brunch. Charles Ferruza, hello again.
Hello, Gina.
Mary Block, good morning.
Hi, Gina.
And Jenny Vergara, how's it going?
Good morning.
You're getting ready for rosé with your Yes Way Rosé sweatshirt.
I thought it was a fitting homage to the theme today to wear my Yes Way Rosé t-shirt. So.
Rosé does sound like a nice brunch wine.
We're almost there. Like it's almost time.
Well, let's get back to our callers. I want to check in with Christine. Christine is calling from... Christine, where are you?
I'm in my car, but I'm from Lake Tapawingo.
Where's Lake Tapawingo?
It is actually right on the cusp of Blue Springs, Lee Summit, and Independence, right off 70 Highway.
I'll have to check it out. Where do you go for... where do you go for brunch?
Ragazza.
In Westport. Tell us more.
Yeah, Cucina della Ragazza. Well, they have two exceptional brunch dishes, but one is like off the charts. It's the Italian biscuits and gravy, which are incredible, made with Italian sausage and spicy and just really I've never had anything like it. It's fantastic.
What else makes it anything else make it Italian other than the Italian sausage and the spiciness?
Well, yeah, because she actually puts it on au gratin potatoes with an egg on top. Yeah, it's just a different spin on it, and it's delicious. And I am not a biscuits and gravy kind of person, so I guess it's not really biscuits and gravy. It's just Italian sausage stuff. But it's delightful and filling and massive.
Okay, well, thanks for that recommendation, Christine. Anyone else have a good hearty brunch dish that they want to tell us about? That sounds like one of those stick to your ribs brunches we were discussing earlier.
There is one at Boulevard Tavern. It's a chicken and biscuit. So it's a play. It's a riff on chicken and biscuits. I mean, biscuits and gravy and chicken and waffles. And they make the chicken with a cornflake crust. And it is so crisp and crunchy. It's not greasy. Chicken stays moist. And then there's a biscuit underneath. It's served with a bourbon gravy. And I would never order this dish. But I was with my son, and he ordered it, and he couldn't finish it. And I gobbled it up. It was great.
They do a great brunch there,
for sure. They do.
We have another Italian brunch recommendation from Jennifer. From Kansas City, now living in Texas. Are you listening to us from Texas, Jennifer?
No, actually, I'm on the road. I'm leaving Kansas City right now, sadly.
Well, what's the brunch you're going to miss?
Oh, V's Italian Restaurant on 40 Highway in Independence. They have the best Italian and brunch that you can get. You get all of the regular breakfast foods, like your biscuits and gravy and eggs Benedict, but they also have an omelet bar. And then they have pastas, and you can... And Italian sausage and the mimosas, great service, very fancy fine dining. And then they have a dessert bar there, too, with their Italian rum cake you cannot miss.
Well, thank you, Jennifer. We have a few people here who might have a very specific definition of fine dining. So we're not sure, but we'll take the V's Italian Restaurant brunch recommendation. Charles, you have a few recommendations we haven't gotten to, and I'd like you to just, what have we not gotten to on your list that you think we absolutely have to?
Well, I can't believe we haven't gotten to the Westport Cafe. Oh. That's really a nice, very romantic, very elegant brunch.
Tell us about it.
They were movers and shakers in the added drink component. That was a new thing.
The added drink? What do you mean?
So they add the price of your brunch. You get your choice of a couple of different cocktails. I think it's two or three. And that was the first time Kansas City had really seen brunch that came with a cocktail.
Really? That seems like kind of a standard thing at this point anyway.
You were always charged separate for, you know, bottomless mimosas or whatever it was you got until Westport.
And you can get one, like a mimosa or a Bloody Mary.
You just pick whichever one you want.
Well, Charles, what else do you want to tell us about Westport Cafe's brunch?
I have, you know, it's a menu brunch, and I'm not all that adventurous at brunch time, but everything I've had from that menu has been so good and so wholesome, hearty is the word I'm looking for, and it's just a nice, quiet place to...
Well, I'm with Jenny on hash. I love a good hash, and they make a great one. It's a chicken confit hash. You can add an egg on top, but the potatoes are really crispy. They don't, you know, take it off too early, and the chicken confit is so moist and wonderful, and just it's a perfect combination of flavors.
I think it speaks to the culinary talent in the kitchen there.
Yeah.
I mean, it really does.
We have a tweet from someone named Tyson who says, got to give a shout out to Crockstrom Club brunch. He's recommending particularly Gravlax S'morebrod. Pardon me if that's not how you say
it's
it.
That's actually
but
pretty
I'm,
good. Pretty
really?
Good yeah.
Thank
that's good.
You. Has anyone had that?
I have.
I heard it's very good.
It's so close to me. You know what I mean? I could just like literally fall out of my house and fall into their front door. So I'm really excited about
their
brunch.
Do you do that?
I try not to, but I do. I've been there many times for brunch. And it's
well, tell us about the Scandinavian brunch.
Well, you know, it's a lot of their dinner menu items that have just been dressed up for breakfast with either a poached or a fried egg.
But such as? Items such as?
They do a sausage, a breakfast sausage that's wrapped in kind of a potato pancake that they do there and that comes with with an egg, I think. They obviously do a lot with smoked salmon, so there's several dishes that feature smoked salmon very prominently.
Yum.
There's a fish cake that has an egg on top, which is just delicious. I mean, and they have a great little wine list and cocktail list, so.
We are hearing a lot of egg on top today. So, Jenny, I want to ask you, while we're in European brunch territory, about the brunch at Affaire, because you've also mentioned that.
Right. So Affaire to me is like this place where you want to go and have like a quiet, very chill brunch. It's kind of like a sophisticated brunch, if you will.
And we should say this is a downtown German restaurant.
Right. Modern German. That's exactly right. But I'm telling you, their brunch menu is really inventive. I mean, it's got things on it where you think, oh, interesting. And there's a couple of things right now. So the last time I was in there, which was probably a couple of weeks ago, I had their Jägerschnitzel, which, talk about comforting and big. I
mean, what is Jägerschnitzel?
It's a crispy breaded pork cutlet, and it has a fried egg on it. It's got mushroom sauce, and it's just, I mean, it's like chicken fried steak. You know what I mean? It's just like this, but it's pork, obviously, a pork cutlet on the plate, and it's just rich with the mushroom gravy and fried egg on top. It's just
rich is sort of the operative word for Affaire.
It is.
It's a very rich menu. I have not had what you have on your list, avocado chocolate pancakes. They sound awful.
Well, it sounds like a health version of pancakes, but I'm intrigued because I'm everything avocado right now, so I want to try. They have a dish on their menu. I was looking at it today, in fact. Avocado chocolate pancakes with pineapple stew and a chantilly cream.
Hmm.
And that sounds like some sort of healthy take, perhaps, on pancakes. So,
well, an avocado is sweet.
I would like to try that.
You've also got, I wanted you to quickly tell us about the Jarocho Seafood Brunch.
Yeah, this is relatively new that they started doing brunch at Jarocho, which is Kansas City, Kansas.
Pardon me, Jarocho.
Famous kind of seafood place. Their second location is going to open in April out south, so hopefully they'll do it there. But
where are they now?
KCK. Yeah, they're in KCK. So they do a brunch, kind of a seafood buffet that has oysters on it. It's kind of a all-you-can-eat seafood bar. And then you get to order one breakfast item that they have featured. And they rotate and change. But there's a small menu that you get. So
is it hard to get in, Jenny? It's a very tiny place.
Yeah, you know, it depends on how busy it is.
And it's popular.
It has become a kind of a foodie darling for sure. And it's a fun, raucous atmosphere. So it'd be a great place to go, especially if you love seafood.
Mary, what is the one thing we haven't talked about from your list yet that you want to make sure we do?
You know, because I want to get them all in, I'll put them in one category. The kind of quirky, quaint place that you can't make a reservation for would be Happy Gillis, Genesee Royale Bistro in West Bottoms, and Succotash, which is a longtime favorite. And I was going to take my son the other day on the way to the airport, and the line was out the door.
What do you order at Succotash?
I love their pork hash. They roast the pork like carnitas for their Cuban sandwiches during the week, and then they use it on the weekend for the pork hash. They have crispy potatoes like cottage fries, sliced thin, and then black beans and an egg. You know, I'm kind of transported back to New Mexico, and I love that.
So, Mary, you have also recommended Port Fonda for DIY Bloody Marys.
Yes.
It is 10:57, and I've been trying to wait till it's late enough to talk about drinks, and I'm not sure we're going to get to late enough for drinks on this show today, not on a weekday. But so tell us about the DIY Bloody Marys at Port Fonda.
You can order it with tequila, vodka, gin, whatever you want. They'll give you a glass with that liquor in it, and then you go up to the bar, and you can have green tomato sauce. You can have, juice. You can have spicy tomato juice. You can put egg, hard-boiled eggs, pickles, bacon, jalapenos. You could kind of make a meal in a glass.
Anyone else have, Jenny, any boozy recommendations for our brunch now that it's 10:57, almost 10:58?
A good rule of thumb is to find a good bartender or a good bar that serves a good drink. That's going to be your place to have a really good brunch, because almost anybody can cook an egg well.
Can you give us one example of a bar that has a great brunch?
Jack's. We talked about Jack's earlier. I think Jack's is phenomenal. But Voltaire would be another great example in the West Bottoms. Great bar, interesting brunch menu, fantastic.
Well, our time is up, but the weekend is pretty much here, which means we can stop talking about brunch and start eating brunch. So yay for that. Jenny, Charles, Mary, have a great weekend.
You too.
Thanks, you too.
Jenny Vergara joins us from Feast Magazine. Mary Block is a food writer who blogs at Around the Block. And Charles Ferruza is KCUR's longtime contributor and food critic. His reviews can be found in the Shawnee Mission Post and The Independent. You can listen back to this show at kcur.org/centralstandard, and we'll have that list of best brunches in Kansas City ready for you as well. KCUR's Central Standard is produced by Matthew Long Middleton, Sylvia Maria Gross, Jen Chen, Andrea Tudhope, and Suzanne Hogan. Caitlin Troutman is our intern. Linda Scher runs the board for us every day. And our theme music is by Spoonbender Labs. I'm Gina Kaufman.